Okay, I want to thank the Hirschbergs again for hosting this shiur. Thank you all for coming to learn together so soon after the fast. There's no better way to spend our time during our Seder Yemei Tshuva than thinking about Tshuva, learning Torah, relating to Tshuva. I assume that's what the topic is supposed to be, right? Something related to Tshuva. Okay, so learning Torah that relates to Tshuva, and hopefully giving us some moments where we can actually think about what our plan is for the coming year, for the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, for Yom HaKippurim. So I want to share with you a piece of Torah that I heard 2 weeks ago. I know time is a little bit fuzzy in my mind, but I was in England not that long ago, a week or two ago, and there was a conference of all the rabbis under the United Synagogue, which is under the chief rabbi's jurisdiction. And part of that is that the Beis Din, the London Beis Din, is under sort of like the same umbrella that the chief rabbi is under. So the members of the London Beis Din were there, and there was a Dayan who I never met before by the name of Dayan Zobin, who is a Rav also in Shul, in Eretz Yisrael Shul in England. Anyone ever been to England before at the Hendon? Did you go to the Neri Yisrael Shul?
I don't remember.
Okay, so if you did, he was not the rabbi at the time. Rabbi Kimchi probably was, but Dayan Zobin is the rabbi there, and he gave a very nice, what I thought was a very beautiful shiur to the group of rabbanim, and I'm going to share that shiur with you right now. I'll add maybe a word or two, but mostly I'm just going to say over what Dayan Zobin said, and maybe you'll gave me some moments of thought and contemplation. I thought maybe it would do the same for others as well. He started with today's parak in Hilchos Tshuva, meaning we know that the Rambam has 10 prakim of Hilchos Tshuva, and Rav Soloveitchik used to say that probably the reason the Rambam wrote Hilchos Tshuva in 10 prakim is because he was setting a curriculum for the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, that he wanted us to finish the 10 prakim of Hilchos Tshuva during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. So the first two prakim were Rosh Hashanah, the third parak, L'chora, if we're keeping up, most of us are about 3 prakim behind, but the third parak would have been today, would have been Som Gedalia. So the third parak of Hilchos Tshuva starts out with probably one of the earlier things we learn in our Jewish education. And that is, he says, Kol echad ve'echad mibnei ha'adam yesh lo zechuyos va'avonos. Every person has mitzvos and they have averos. And how do you get judged on Rosh Hashanah? Mi shezuchiyosav yiseiros al avonosav. Someone who has more mitzvos than they have averos. What do we call that person? Tzaddik. And mi shavonosav yiseiros al zuchiyosav. And someone who has more averos than mitzvos, Rasha. And mechza the mechza, if the person is exactly 50-50, what do we call that person? Beinoni. Right? So this is it's like the first project the kid brings home from preschool is that, the second project. My granddaughter brought home from daycare she's 11 months old, she's very talented, she brought home a project of a laminated apple-shaped thing with her picture in the middle. So that, I mean, that's the most magnificent project ever, but the lesser project that all other children make is a scale. And it's got that metal piece that like can go one direction or the other, right? Because that's symbolic of Rosh Hashanah. That's what Rosh Hashanah is all about. It's the scale. And if it's even, you're a Beinoni. And if it's more in this direction, you're a Tzaddik. More in that direction, you're a Rasha. And that's how it works, right? So that's what the Rambam spells out for us, how it works in Rosh Hashanah. And basically, this Aseres Yemei Tshuva is all about those of us who manage to hit it exactly 50-50. That every time we do a mitzvah, we make sure to make up for it with an avera. And every time we do an avera, we make up for it with a mitzvah. And we were exactly 50-50, so that's what we need our Aseres Yemei Tshuva for. And the rest of the people have more mitzvahs, more averos, they don't need our Aseres Yemei Tshuva. That's what the Rambam writes. And that's not only on an individual level, he says on a national level, if a medina has more zechuyos than averos, then it's a medina that's a medina of tzadekes, and if it's more averos, then it's a medina resha'a, and v'chein kala olam kulo, and Hashem judges the whole world. And he says, what's going to happen if a person is a Rasha? Meis perisho. What's going to happen to a medina that has more rishos? Oveda is going to be destroyed. And then he goes on that, you know, you might think that you might be able to keep a calculation in your mind. You say, oh, so if I want to know whether I'll have to worry about a Aseres Yemei Tshuva next year, maybe I'll just start keeping cheshbon right now, and I'll just start writing down every mitzvah I do, every Rabbi Yehuda, I do, and I'll keep my HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't worry, I'll do the accounting this year, and I'll figure it out, and I'll know if I have more or less. So then you'll never be able to do that accounting, the Rambam says, because we don't know how much weight each mitzvah or Avera has, meaning there are some very, very heavy mitzvahs and lighter mitzvahs. There are some very heavy Averas and lighter Averas, and we just don't know the calculus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's weight and measure system up in Shemayim, so we would never know. But the system is still true. And the whole perek seems to be about that. It seems to be all about this idea of the two sides of the scale, the mitzvot on one side, the aver on the other side. And then he gets to the seventh halacha in the perek. And the Rambam writes, Afal pishet ki ha-shofar b'rosh ha-shana gezeres ha-kasuv, that even though when we blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, it's a decree of the Torah, Hashem says you do it, so we do it, remez yeshpo. Nevertheless, there's still a hint, there's something, there's a message for us in shofar, and this is a very famous Rambam, you could probably finish it off right now. Kolomar, what's the shofar telling us? Uru yeshenim mishinaschem. That those who are sleeping need to wake up from their sleep, v'hakitzu nirdamim mitardamaschem, and those who are slumbering should wake up from their slumber, v'chipsu b'ma'aseichem v'chizru b'tshuva, and you have to search all of your deeds, your actions, and you have to do tshuva, v'zichru borachem, and remember your Creator. And who are these people that are sleeping? Elu ha'shochem es ha'emes b'havle azman. It's the people that forget emes, which means they fail to focus on that which is MS because they're busy with Havlei Hazman. Probably for much of Jewish history, people didn't even know what this Rambam was talking about. Havlei Hazman, what were people busy with? They were either busy with Averos or they were busy with trying to survive. Right? We understand this very well. Havlei Hazman is like an actually perfect phrase to describe how people in 21st century America spend the majority of their time. Right? The Rambam never saw Instagram. Right, but Havle Hazman, can you think of a better way to describe Instagram than not all of it, only like 99% of it, than Havle Hazman? Right, it's just a way to kill time. It's just something that it's not bad, it's not good, it's just hevel. It's just nothingness. It's just blank air. It's just a waste of our time and a total waste of our breath. And that's what people spend so much time doing, the Rambam says, and we forget to focus on that which is MS. Vishogim kol shnasam behevel verik. And again, the description of Twitter or X or whatever, and Facebook and Instagram, and all the description couldn't be more perfect. It's hevel verik asher lo yoil velo yatzil. It's nothingness. It doesn't help. It doesn't save. It doesn't do any good. And the shofar is meant to wake us up and to tell us, stop it already. Just wake up and do something productive. That's the purpose of the shofar. And then the Rambam says, lefichach, and therefore, everyone, tzorich kol adam shiira atzmo kolash anakula kilu chetzi zakei v'chetzi chayiv. Everyone has to see the whole year as if it's exactly 50-50, and the whole world as if it's exactly 50-50, and you should realize that chata, chet echon, if you do one aveira, harei echriya atzmo v'echriyas kol olam kula l'kav chova, that you're balancing the whole scale of the whole world in the other direction, where the whole world's going to be lost because of the one aveira that we choose to do, because everything else was exactly 50-50. That's how the Rambam describes. V'garim l'mashchasa, and asa mitzvah achas, but obviously on the positive also, if you do one mitzvah, if everything is exactly 50-50, then you're going to tip everything lekav zchus. So I didn't tell you anything that you don't know yet. I just told you this Rambam, which is a very well-known Rambam. If you haven't heard it a half a dozen times, you probably didn't go through K-12 Jewish education, right? Meaning this is explicit in the Rambam. But what I did is I just summarized for you 8 straight halachas in the Rambam. And I will tell you that there is one that does not belong. In the old Sesame Street game, which one of these is not like the others, right? Which one of these halachos, which one of these statements that the Rambam makes has no business in this chapter? So which one is it?
Shofar.
Oh, so the Rambam, he's describing the scale, 50-50, the world, yourself, everything, 50-50. And then in the middle of nowhere, Ur Yushen Mishinaschan, the shofar is there to wake us up from our slumber, to wake us up from our sleep. And then he goes right back into it in the next halacha. And the fichach, because the shofar is there to wake you up from your sleep, you have to see the whole world as if everything's 50-50, and you do one aveira, it's going to go that way, you do one mitzvah, it's going to go that way. He goes right back to it. He jumps right back into the whole 50-50 business right after he finished. What is that line of the Rambam of the shofar doing right in middle of his description of the scales up in Shemayim? The shofar has nothing to do with the scales up in Shemayim. It's a nice message. It's a great thing. I would have put it somewhere, maybe in Ilchus Rosh Hashanah. It's a beautiful message that when the shofar sounds, it should mean something to us. It should wake us up. It should do something to us. But what's it doing there? So that's question number one. Question number two, does this seem like realistic? Meaning that the whole world is exactly 50-50 and we are exactly 50-50? Like, what are the mathematical, whatever God's cheshbon is of how heavy certain mitzvahs are and heavy certain averos are, whatever. I don't know that cheshbon, nobody does. But whatever it is, what are the chances that you hit it directly on the 50-50 mark? You know how hard that is when you're balancing two sides of a scale, especially when you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of things on each side, to hit it pumped right in the middle that it's going to be exactly 50-50? Is this just like a psychological game? Is that what the Rambam is saying? That you should pretend something that's absolutely untrue, and there's like a 0.00001% chance that it's actually true about you. Oh, and more than that, we're going to have the entire Jewish people spend a week sitting and schwitzing and worrying and doing tshuva and on the chance that maybe one person in the entire Klal Yisrael is actually that person that's 50-50. I mean, 99.99999% of us are fine or dead, right? Meaning it's already taken care of. That already happened in Rosh Hashanah. It's just a person. It's exactly 50-50. That person is going to have to worry about it. That seems crazy. That it's all a psychological game that's based on sheker. One thing about the Torah that we know is that Torah is emes, and the whole method of Torah and the whole method of observance of Torah is supposed to be emes. It shouldn't be based on a sheker. It shouldn't be based on something that is not true. It's emes and sheker. Emes is a milara word, but anyway. So Torah is emes and it is not sheker, right? So what is this? It's a psychological trick. So Dayan Zobin suggested the following. He said, you know, you got to take a step back and understand a little bit more about tshuva. The Rambam, in the simplest reading of the Rambam, doesn't seem to assume that there is a mitzvah of tshuva. The Rambam starts off Hilchos Tshuva, where he writes that kol mitzvah shebetorah bein aseh bein lo saseh. Any mitzvah in the Torah, positive commandment, negative commandment, im avar adam alachas mehen, if you violate any of these mitzvahs, he goes on to say bein pesach bein mishkaga, whether on purpose or by accident, kishe yase tshuva v'yashem mecheto, when you're anyway going to do tshuva, chayiv l'svados lefnei hakel baruch hu, you have to say vidui. And the Rambam seems to say in Sefer HaMitzvos, the mitzvah is not tshuva. The mitzvah is vidui. Tshuva is just something that you do, and when you're doing tshuva, you have to do it in a way where you say vidui. That there's no other way to do tshuva. So when you do tshuva, the mitzvah is to do vidui, which is very strange, right? Everyone asks on this Rambam, that's a little bit backwards, right? You would think that tshuva is the mitzvah, and now that I know that there's a mitzvah of tshuva, you tell me how to do the mitzvah of tshuva, but tell me that tshuva is not even a mitzvah. It's like a circumstance thing. It's like you don't need to bench, but when you wash, then you need to bench. So you don't need to say vidui, but if you're gonna do tshuva, tshuva being the equivalent in this case of the washing, of having bread for a meal, then you do vidui, which is the real mitzvah. It seems very strange that there's no mitzvah of tshuva, that it should be just like eating a meal that triggers a chiyuv of birchas hamazon. So why shouldn't there be a mitzvah of tshuva? There is a wonderful Meshech Chachma, really like fascinating Meshech Chachma, where the Meshech Chachma says something actually quite basic. Meshech Chachma says, he says, it's not really a kasha why there's no mitzvah of tshuva. He said, if anything, I have a kasha why there would be a mitzvah of tshuva. Where does a mitzvah of tshuva come in? He says, v'nis bonein. Meshech Chachma was Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk. He was obviously one of the Gedolei Torah in this little tiny town called Dvinsk in Poland, where there were two great Gedolim that happened to live there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted two of the greatest Gedolim of the early part of the 20th century in the same little tiny two-by-nothing town at the same time. the Ragachavar Gon, and who's a Hasidish Rav, and Rav Meir Simcha Midvinsk, the Mesh Chachma, the Yer Sameach, who's a Litvish Rav. And Rav Meir Simcha writes in the Mesh Chachma, he says, V'nisponein, D'shem tshuva k'fi ma shemor shema, eich nechsheves le mitzvah. He says, I don't even understand how tshuva could possibly be a mitzvah. She yashuv mikislo v'lo yechta od, what's the mitzvah? That you're going to commit not to do an Avera again? Well, let me ask you something. I assume no one here has murdered anybody, right? Yet, at least, right? So if I were to ask you, are you obligated to not murder somebody? Mm-hmm. Right? Everyone here is obligated to not murder somebody. You heard it here first.
No.
What?
I said no.
You said no? Oh, no, but everybody here is so... Okay, make sure I'll tell your husband to watch out. Everybody here is obligated to not murder somebody, right? It makes no difference whether what your history is, whether you've never done it before. Everyone here is obligated to not eat a cheeseburger. Everyone here is obligated to do acts of chesed. Everyone here is obligated to, I don't know, whatever the mitzvah is, to keep Shabbos this week. We're all obligated to do it anyway. And what's tshuva? Tshuva is that I'm going to commit that I'm not going to murder somebody, that I'm going to keep Shabbos, that I'm going to do acts of chesed. That's tshuva. So, says Mesh Chachma, I don't understand. That's just being a Jew. What does tshuva mean? Tshuva means that you're going to commit to do things that anyway you had to do? That's not a mitzvah. That doesn't make sense that should be a mitzvah. That's just, you're born a Jew, you got to do Jewish things. You're obligated to all the mitzvahs. So to commit that you're not going to do an Avera, to commit that you're going to do a mitzvah, you're already committed. Your forefathers and our neshamas already committed ourselves with Nasa v'nishma at our Sinai. He says, "Halo below a mitzvah, mitzuma v'yomein l'bi l'avar al mitzvah s'Hashem Yisbarach." Without any special mitzvah called tshuva, of course we're not allowed to do Averas. Of course we have to do mitzvahs. What? Because you have a past history of having violated the Avera, now it triggers a mitzvah to commit to not do that Avera again? We anyway have to commit not to do that Avera again, or ever, even in the first place. It's got nothing to do with tshuva. So Mesh Chachma, like, turns it on its head. Everyone wonders about the Rambam. How could the Rambam say that there's no mitzvah of tshuva? Come on, the mitzvah of tshuva is such a big deal. It's got to be that there's a mitzvah of tshuva. Mesh Chachma says it makes no sense that there should be a mitzvah of tshuva, because mitzvah of tshuva just means that you're going to be a religious Jew, which you got to do anyway. So it doesn't even make sense there should be a mitzvah of tshuva. So if we're keeping track, how many questions did we ask so far? Okay, so depending on how you count it, right? We have, what is the Halacha Zion doing there with the shofar right in the middle of a whole chapter about 50-50, right? We have, what are the chances that anybody's actually 50-50? Like, we make a whole big deal about this 50-50 thing. We spend all the time to make tshuva to deal with the 50-50 thing. Chances are none of us are actually 50-50. And now we have the Mesh Chachmas Kasha that I think the Rambam makes perfect sense and nobody else makes any sense, says Mesh Chachma. It doesn't make any sense that there should be a mitzvah called tshuva, because anyway you have to commit to the real reason I can't do an Avera and I have to do a mitzvah is that there are mitzvahs in the Torah, mitzvah saseh, mitzvah sal saseh. So there's no new mitzvah of tshuva. Flips the whole thing on its head. So those are the three basic questions. So to answer these questions, what Dayan Zobin suggested is another very famous idea that probably all of you have heard. How many of you have ever learned passages, any passage, from the Sefer Michtav Eliyahu? Okay, who wrote the Sefer Michtav Eliyahu?
Reb Dessler.
Good. So Reb Dessler was a very, very important thinker. And normally when you want to learn machshava, you want to learn hashkafa, so Rav Dessler does have certain shittos that are very unique, but he also just has a lot of very deep and important ideas in terms of laying the groundwork for proper Jewish thought. So in the Sefer Michtav Eliyahu, I have a friend, a very good friend, Rabbi Moshe Bamberger from Lander College for Men, who wrote a book once. He wrote many, many books. One of his books is called Great Jewish Classics. And I remember when he was writing it, he tried to collect, I think it's the 200 or 300 most famous or most important svarim in Jewish history. it's a very difficult thing to do. Like, how do you narrow it down to the 200 and also, I mean, obviously my sefer, but like, you know, but what are the other 199 going to be? You know, that's going to be. So he had and what he was going to do is, and what he did was he made one page for each of the svarim that, you know, that is a great Jewish classic, and one example of Torah from that sefer. So I remember he handed me a list once of like a list of a few hundred svarim. He said, first thing that comes to mind when you see these svarim, what's the first piece of Torah that you think of? Ramban ala Torah. What's the first Ramban ala Torah that you think of, right? Okay, so the one about Nisim and all of Teva is really nice, probably that one. What's first Rashi? What's the first Rashi that you think of? Rashi al Chumash that you would think of. When it's a fun game to play. It's good if you know, you go around the table, you know, and you could see what people think. What's the most famous Tshuva l'Chassam Sofer? What's the whatever throughout all of history. What's the most famous passage in Michtam Eliyahu? What's the most well-known passage in all of Michtam Eliyahu? So I would submit that the most well-known passage in all of Michtam Eliyahu, someone want to take a guess?
Chesed.
What? Chesed is a good one. Ava and Hav. Okay, that's a good one. I see where you're coming from.
Nekuda
Sabachira. I would think it's the Nekuda Sabachira. Right? What is the Nekuda Sabachira? So here's how he describes. He coins the phrase Nekuda Sabachira. You know, when we think of free will, we don't realize how narrow our range of free will actually is. We don't realize how much of what we do just comes naturally without any thought whatsoever, right? Meaning the fact that I didn't eat a cheeseburger today, I would even go further, the fact that I didn't eat today until 7:33 or whatever time the fast was over, I didn't really have bechira on that, meaning I'm a rabbi. You know, I've been doing this for a long time. I don't think I ever broke my fast on any fast day. Like, I don't think. Like, I can't remember being sick enough to break my fast. Like, of course I didn't eat today. Like, it wasn't. It's not like I woke up this morning thinking, I hope I make it. Like, oh gosh, I hope it's going to be really tough to not eat lunch. Like, you know, depending on who you are, where you are, what your situation in life, most of the good things you do and the bad things you do, you don't really think. You're not really making a choice. That's not really where your bechira is. Our range of where we're at, where we have bechira, is very, very narrow. Somebody who's been keeping Shabbos for decades doesn't really have bechira to break Shabbos. I mean, you have bechira in the sense that Hashem is not stopping you, right? You could theoretically do it, but you're not going to do it. I mean, I could predict with 99.9% accuracy that nobody in this room is going to break Shabbos this week, right? Meaning, I'd be pretty confident that I'd be right about that. That no one's on purpose. I mean, maybe by accident, but no one's going to purposely be Mechal Shabbos this week. It's not even something we really have a choice to do. You know, so when it comes to grand gestures and mitzvos, that's also beyond my free will sometimes, to do something that's an enormously huge commitment, or something that would take a tremendous amount of Mesiras Nefesh. The actual battleground of Bechira is very, very tiny. It's very limited. And Rav Dessler points out that range can shift over time. The mashal he gives is trench warfare, which I guess was a mashal that resonated better at different times in history when more Jewish people were drafted into the army and actually fighting trench warfare. But I guess, you know, unfortunately, we still have to have our chayalim in Eretz Yisrael very often in harm's way, although it's not so much trench warfare, it's a different kind of warfare. But the idea is that you dig a trench and there's the people that are a mile behind the soldiers are fine. They're just living their lives and there's nothing going on. The people that are a mile in the other direction, they're also fine. There's nothing going on. The battleground is right here. The battleground is right where the two armies are meeting. And then one army makes an advance and they move the battleground over 20 feet, 50 feet, 100 feet. So now the next 100 feet, that's the battleground. And now there's more space where there's nothing going on behind them, right? Meaning it just keeps moving over. And that's how he explains what Nekudas HaBechira is, that a person could start their lives where it's a very, very big challenge to, let's say, have Kavana during the first bracha of Shmones, right? And they almost, you know, it's really something they struggle with and struggle with and struggle with. And then one day a person comes up with a mahalich of how to make sure that they focus in the first bracha of Shmones, right? I'm not embarrassed to say what age I was when that happened. For me, I heard a mahalich that worked for me to actually focus on the entire first bracha of Shmones, right? And then it it stops being Bechira after that. It just becomes, that's how you do Shmon Esrei, when you do it three times a day. That just comes naturally to you. Obviously, there are times where it's more intense, you know, Yom Norayim and other times of Tzara, but it's always there, meaning it's always there. Now my Nukudas HaBechira has shifted from the first Bracha to, you know, V'lam Al Shinin. You know, like, that's where I have a lot of trouble keeping my focus. I mean, before that also. But, you know, that's certainly a place where there's much more trouble keeping focus on the Shmon Esrei. The battleground shifts over time. Dayan Zobin said that he knew a young man, pretty, like, astonishing situation. He said he knew this young man who grew up homeless. From the age of six, he grew up homeless. He said, like, as a little boy, he remembers waking up on a park bench with a knife pressed against his eye as someone was mugging him for whatever food or clothing he may have gotten that day. Like, this kind of upbringing. So obviously, what's going to happen with a person like that, right? How's that person going to turn out? So as a teenager, this person was surviving. How were they surviving? By mugging old ladies on the street, right? Meaning that was his, eventually he said it was a miracle. I mean, this guy somehow came toward Yiddishkeit, and he was taken in by the from community, and now he's like a Ben Taira, and he's learning in Kaila or whatever, you know. But he went through this period, and Dayan Zobin said that he was talking to the fellow, and the fellow was saying that even when he was making his living mugging old ladies, when he would knock them to the ground, he would lower them gently to the ground. He said that was his thing. He couldn't push an old lady hard to the ground. So when he took her money and he held a knife to her throat, he would lower her gently to the ground, not to hurt her on the way down to the ground. Meaning his Nekudas HaBechira, right, was in a very different place, I assume, than our Nekudas HaBechira. Right? I have no taiva to mug an old lady at all, right? And I assume none of you do either, right? Our Nekudas HaBechira is not there at all. He also had no Bechira whether to mug an old lady. He was going to do it. That's all he did. That was it's on different sides of the line, but it's not part of our Nekudas HaBechira, it's not part of his Nekudas HaBechira. His Nekudas HaBechira was when he was knocking the lady down to the ground. Is he going to push her down to the ground, or is he going to lower her? And that was the battlefront that he fought on, and that's where when he was careful, and he tried to be careful, that was his victory in his Avodas Hashem, in his acting like a decent human being. It's a totally different level than us. But that's the battleground. That's where each person on their own level, that's where a person grows. So Dayan Zobin suggested that what the Rambam is saying is really something amazing about tshuva. The essence of tshuva is to change oneself so fundamentally that it will be impossible for you to imagine doing such a sin again. That Hashem, who is Yodea Ta'alumos, the Rambam writes this, the Rambam describes this, that the full tshuva is that if you do tshuva to the point where the Yodea Ta'alumos, where God who knows all of your secrets, knows that you won't do that Avera again, Shul Yashuv Lecheto O, that you're never going to return to that Avera again. How do you get to that point? You get to that point by moving your Nekudas HaBechira. By saying that Hashem, not that I'm ever going to, a young man came over to me in shul last night and said, I did an Avera, I want to do tshuva for it. The Rambam says that the only way to do tshuva gemura is by being in the same situation again, with the same Yetzer Hara again, and not doing it. He said, I don't want to put myself in the same situation again. How can I ever do tshuva for that Avera? He says, I can't even imagine that I ever will be in that same situation again. He did not elaborate on what the, you know, sometimes you want to say, like, what did you do? You seem like such a nice kid. Like, was it really bad? You know, but he did not elaborate on what exactly the Avera was. But what's the answer? The answer is no. You're not supposed to put yourself in the same situation again. You're not supposed to try for a nisayon. But you should do tshuva to the point where now your Nekudas HaBechira is such, where Hashem would say, the Yodea Talumos, Hashem would say, this is just not something this person would do. The same way I could predict with 99.9% accuracy that none of you are going to be Mechal Shabbos B'mezid this Shabbos. That Hashem should be able, we should all be able to predict about that boy, that he's not going to, whatever his Avera is, he didn't share that with me. So the higher level of tshuva, to be in that same situation, doesn't even actually require that you be in the same situation. See, that maybe can explain, can answer the Meshech Chachma's question. And the Mesh, what was the Mesh Chachma's question? Who remembers? What was the Mesh Chachma's question that we asked from Rav Meir Simcha?
How could Shuvah be a mitzvah if that's like everyone should be doing the right thing?
Right. I mean, how could Shuvah be a mitzvah if all Shuvah means that I'm not going to do the Aver again? I was never allowed to do the Aver to begin with. If all Shuvah means I'm going to do the mitzvah, I was always obligated to do the mitzvah. Ooh, so what do we see over here? I was always obligated not to do the Averos. I was always obligated to do all the mitzvahs. The mitzvah of tshuva is to turn the Avera into something that's outside my Nekudas HaBechira. To turn the Avera into something that I couldn't even imagine doing. That would be beyond, to change myself so fundamentally that that's not something I would do. That anyone who knows me would say, that's not something he would do. Right, that's tshuva. My obligation in all the mitzvahs of the Torah is just not to do the los aseis and yes to do the aseis. That's it. It's not about changing myself fundamentally to the point where I wouldn't, where I'm not the type of person who ever would do such a thing. Tshuva requires a shift of the nekudas habechira. That answers the Meshech Chachma's question, that the original imperative is to do a mitzvah sasei, not to do a mitzvah sasei. The mitzvah of tshuva is absolute azivas hacheit, which means that I change the way I operate and I change the way I behave so drastically that I can't do the avera, I must do the mitzvah. And that might be what Chazal mean when they say, v'makam shebali tshuva omdin, ein tzadikim gemurim yuchalim lamur. That bali tshuva are in a place where tzadikim gemurim are not. Tzadikim gemurim means someone didn't do navera. Bal tshuva means I've become someone who wouldn't do the avera. You understand the difference? Right? Maybe I've never violated certain averos because I was never given the opportunity or because I've overcome the yetzer hara each time, but to turn yourself into someone who wouldn't do the avera, that's a different madrega. Part of the implication of this idea is that most of our lives, and this is something I want, you know, I've been thinking about, and I think it's worthwhile for all of us to think about. Most of our lives, and most of what we do, we're not really confronting a challenge. You know, the enemy is not avera. The enemy is this sense of neutrality and passivity that we have, that we're just passive about everything. It's that we don't engage in any sort of battle. Dayan Zobin quoted the Ravalbi. Ravalbi said that halavai, once a week I would make an actual choice in life. That, you know, we do so much that's just because we do, because that's what we do, that's how we behave. He gave an example, Dayan Zobin gave an example of a guy that came over to him and he had a situation. I once got a similar shayla, a situation where someone said to him, look, if I don't tell Lashon Hara about my competitor, I'm going to lose a ton of money. It was a business circumstance where telling Lashon Hara would be the only way to save his business. I had a similar shaila not that long ago. Two people were partners and the partnership split, and there was a lot of Lashon Hara going on around about one of them, but it was also true about the other one, and there was no Lashon Hara going on about the other one. So he said, everyone's going to choose my competitor unless they realize that we're both the same, that we both have the same accusations, the same whatever. Can I speak Lashon Hara about the other person in order to protect my business? What's the answer?
No.
Of course not, right? But Dayan Zobin said the fellow that was asking this question to him, he said he was looking at this fellow thinking, you walk into shul at 9:30 to the 8:45 minyan every week. You hang out in the back of the shul talking Lashon Hara from the moment you walk in to the moment you leave with all your buddies, about everybody in the shul. Then you go home to your Shabbos table, you talk Lashon Hara about the rabbi's drasha, you talk Lashon Hara about, right? Meaning, that's like all you do all day. You talk Lashon, like every, you know, Tamidim Kisidram, you know, you are like a Baal Lashon Hara. That's what, but now he's got this Shaila, can I talk Lashon Hara to save my entire business? What kind of like psychology is, you know, what kind of, would drive a person to ask such a Shaila? But what's the answer? That's how he goes to shul. When he goes to shul, he's not thinking. He doesn't make a choice to speak Lashon Hara. He goes to shul, he sits in the back, he hangs out with the chevra that likes to talk, and everyone's making fun of things and making leitzanus of everything. So he's just going, he's not making a choice. It's just what he does. But now, something happened, a circumstance that's unusual for his business, and now there's an actual choice to be made. And when it's a choice, it becomes a battleground. And if we could take some of those things that aren't a choice and just be more mindful of them and realize that they are a choice, they become our new Nekudas HaBechira. Take the things that were not in our Nekudas HaBechira because they were so beyond. There were things that we just do. Averos that we just do all the time. Or mitzvahs that we don't do all the time. And just be mindful about them. And realize that it is a choice. The Rambam says, Uru Yeshenim Mishinaschem, because most of our lives we're asleep. We do mitzvahs because we're used to doing them. We do averos because we're used to doing them. And we have to wake up. And what the Rambam is saying, 50-50, he doesn't really mean, perhaps, that you have exactly 50% averos, 50% mitzvos. What he means is that we're 50-50 people. That the way we live our lives is that an avera just comes, an avera just goes, a mitzvah just comes, a mitzvah just goes. We're chatzi zakei, chatzi chayiv. We should see everything as just we should see everything as if chatzi zakei, chatzi chayiv means that we should see everything as if I'm right in the middle right now. I'm at my battleground. This whatever choice I'm about to make, that is my battleground. And that's why that halacha of Uri Yeshen Mishnaschem fits perfectly. Because if that's what the Rambam's telling me, not that mathematically you're 50-50, but that our avoda is to take whatever mitzvos we don't do and averos that we do and stop just sleepwalking through all of it and wake up and be mindful about it. And by being mindful about it, we're making it the 50-50 mark. We're making that our Nekudas HaBechira. That's our lowering down the old lady gently instead of knocking her to the ground. Or our, much loftier Nekudas HaBechira. Whatever our Nekudas HaBechira is, but it's taking something and making that our 50-50 ground. So the halacha of shofar is wake up. It's don't allow yourself to sleepwalk through life. Be mindful of things that are going on. The Emek Bracha writes that Rav Yitzhak Petterberger was Talmud of Rav Yisrael Salanter. He lived in St. Petersburg, Russia, not Florida. In St. Petersburg, Russia. I'm not sure which place I'd rather live. He said, Dahare Beinuni, Hainu Misha Masov Shkulin Mechza Zuchiyus Mechza Vonos. Vim Kein Lamet Tzarech Tshuva. He says, if a Beinuni really means that you're 50-50, 50% of Averus, 50%. So what does the Rambam say? So therefore, we all have to do tshuva during our service and make tshuva. Why tshuva? Just do any mitzvah, right? Or refrain from any Avera, and that will tip the scale. So why is it tshuva that we have to do? But now we understand. The essence of these days is not about that we're actually mathematically 50-50. The essence of these days is to stop sleeping. It's Uri Yishele Mishinaschem. It's Nidami Mitr Damaschem. Wake up from the slumber. And tshuva is defined as waking up from the slumber. So you do another mitzvah, but you sleepwalked into another mitzvah. Or you sleepwalked into another avera. But the avoda is to wake up. There are no beinanim on Yom Kippur because we're all making choices on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we actually think about things in a mindful way. I was listening to a podcast this week, Rabbi Ari Wasserman did a Headlines podcast where he interviewed like 15 people and he asked all of them the same three questions. It was a good shtick. He asked, what's your favorite Dvar Torah in Yom Narayim? What's a Kabbalah that you would recommend that people should do? And what's a Kabbalah that you've done in the past that has worked for you? Right? Those were the three questions. So one of the people that he interviewed was Rav Neuberger Shlita, Rav Yaakov Neuberger from Bergenfield Yeshiva University. So Rav Neuberger might be the biggest tzaddik I know. Rav Neuberger said that on the question number two, what would be a Kabbalah that you'd recommend? So he said one time he was talking in his shul and he said that he thinks that it's time that the shul makes certain improvements in their Avodas Hashem and the way that they behave, and therefore he's going to suggest that we as a kehila, as a community, take upon ourselves, each and every individual, and we should be on top of it, to take on a new Kabbalah, and that Kabbalah will be... And he took a breath, maybe took a sip of water. Whatever was going through your mind right now, and you were thinking, please don't say that, don't say that, don't say that, don't... That should be your Kabbalah. That's what he said. Whatever you were thinking, like, oh, he better not say, that should be your Kabbalah, because that's the point you struggle. right? The Kabbalah should be something that you struggle with, something that you know is doable, but you know you're going to have to push yourself on a little bit. That's the Kabbalah. So tshuva has to be a moment of alertness, a shift of our nekudas habechira, even if only incrementally. The way trench warfare works, it only works incrementally. It can't be, you know, all at once. And we all know the scenarios that we sleepwalk into an avera, and that are right on that line for us. And the avoda is take that which used to be a choice and make it no longer a choice, and move over that nekudas habechira just a little bit. We've seen it happen in our lives, hopefully. Rabbi Yisrael Reisman often says at this time of year, you always hear people speaking and they say, they ask, the big kasha of the year is, how could it be that we're telling Hashem we're not going to do Averis Gedurin, and this time we mean it and we're going to be better this year, when we're no better than we were last year, and last year we were no better than the year before? And Rabbi Reisman always points out, how a speaker could not be embarrassed to say such words from his mouth is beyond me. How could a person say such a thing? I'm the same as I was last year? That's pathetic. You're the same as you were last year? That's the given? Like, it's a kasha? I'm not the same as I was last year. I hope none of us are the same as we were last year. Most of the good things I do in my life are things that I accepted to do at some point during Yom Narayim. Okay, I flopped on a bunch of them. But most of the good things that I do, most of the things that I do that are a little extra, that are a little better, that are a little, are things that happen. Yom Narayim, we're a shift in the Kudas HaBichira. I referred to one of them before, the first Bracha Shemona Esrei. I used to be spaced out beginning to end. You know, it's like embarrassing. Rabbi Reisman pointed this out also. It's embarrassing. The whole shul is waiting for me to finish Shemona Esrei. And I'm like, you know, my mind is in the middle of nowhere. What are they waiting for? They're waiting for me to come back from my vacation? You know, so most of okay. So now that Nukudas Abechira has shifted. Now it comes much more naturally to me, at least for the first bracha, and for a few other parts. But that's what it's about. It's about taking something that didn't come easily and making it part of your routine, part of your habit, part of what you do each and every day. And when it becomes part of your routine, your Nukudas Abechira shifts. That's the Uru Yeshenim. Mishinaschem, where we can then move our battleground to the next stage, where we could be mindful and fight the battles that we're supposed to fight at our level. I wish everyone a gemar chasima tova.